Diane Roberts, VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Iheyes Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
You have to be early because you don't know what's going to happen today. Is it going to be a mess? You know, people have been waiting for this day for so long. It's like Christmas or the New Year's to them.
That's a customer who was waiting in the cold this morning to buy beer after South Africa eased the restrictions on liquor sales that were part of the COVID lockdown. Details coming up. Also, schools and universities in Cameroon have opened with hundreds of thousands of students going back to class. And a fresh Ebola outbreak has been reported in the Democratic Republic of Congo. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. First, our top story. South Africans woke up to long lines in front of beer outlets on the first day of legal sales in more than 2 months. The country entered level 3 of the coronavirus lockdown today, with alcohol sales permitted but under strict conditions. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Long winding queues started forming around beer outlets as early as 5 a.m. South Africans of all adult age groups, color and gender, braced against the cold to buy their favorite beers and wines. One of the early birds who preferred to remain anonymous described the opening of alcohol sales as the best gift for beer drinkers.
You have to be early because you don't know what's going to happen today. Is it going to be a mess? You know, people have been waiting for this day for so long. It's like Christmas or the New Year's to them. So we couldn't wait then.
Individuals and alcohol outlets owners emerged one after the other, pushing trolleys full of all kinds of beers. This anonymous buyer was one of them, but with no mind of drinking the beers.
I was here in the morning, around about 20 past 7. This is just a private use, so I'm going to buy them, put them in the house. I know when you have visitors, then you give it to them.
Alcohol sales were banned on March 26th when the COVID-19 lockdown started. However, last week the government announced that beer sales would resume under the eased restrictions today. Stringent conditions have been attached to the reopening. Alcohol will be sold only from Monday to Thursday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. There are concerns that when people get drunk, they may expose themselves to contracting COVID-19. However, Minister of Trade and Industry Ibrahim Patel says measures have been put in place to limit transmission.
All of those types of businesses are required to ensure that alcohol is only consumed off-premises. The industry has agreed, this is the liquor industry, that it will take a number of steps to address the risks of transmission at the shops, at the various places.
Police say they worry that drinking could give rise to crime that was subsiding under the lockdown. However, beer drinkers say restricting consumption of alcohol to their homes will reduce crime and drunken driving. South Africa has now over 32,000 reported cases of COVID-19, with the number increasing daily. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Thousands of public schools in South Africa were supposed to reopen for grades 7 and 12 today after being closed for about 2 months because of coronavirus. But education unions, civil society groups, and parent organizations have forced the government to delay the back-to-school date. They argue that sending children back to places of learning at this time would spark a public health disaster. Darren Taylor reports.
One of South Africa's foremost educators and its former education minister, Mary Metcalf, says all the available science shows that schools should remain shut for now.
The starting point is to be able to have the wherewithal to do
what the health scientists have been telling us: hand washing, surface cleaning, masks, space for physical distancing.
Research by education organizations shows that many schools aren't able yet to implement these safety measures. They don't have sanitizers and other chemicals. They have few or no masks. Some don't even have water.
Where water tanks need to be delivered, which is in about 3,500 schools, in no province near those water tanks being delivered.
The government maintains it has provided most schools with thermometers. Children with high temperatures will be sent home, theoretically preventing the spread of COVID-19. Again, Metcalf is doubtful.
The thermal screening, my understanding is that it's a false comfort because of the high levels of asymptomatic infection. And I kind of worry about the extent to which we're spending money and putting in processes for something which I think is problematic.
She says even if schools have all the prevention materials, it does not mean they're ready for pupils. Metcalf says the systems and people needed to manage the children's safety are also lacking.
Schools are complex and under-resourced environments in any event, but now there's a whole additional set of processes and procedures, including taking temperatures, screening everybody every day, and dealing with the urgent issue of which teachers are at risk.
Metcalf believes it's unfair and dangerous to expect teachers to make what could be life or death calls and to accurately determine whether children have symptoms like fever, cough, and redness of eyes.
Once the red flags go up for that set of symptoms, then the school virtually goes into lockdown. It means you call the compliance officer out of the classroom where she's teaching, and you say to them, this child's got to be quarantined because they've got a sore throat and shortness of breath. And this just becomes a complicated issue for schools.
In such stressful situations, say the unions, teachers will err on the side of caution and schools will be shutting constantly across South Africa. The only province that said it's ready to safely open schools is the Western Cape. But a spokesman for the country's Human Rights Commission, Andre Gaum, says it's taking the provincial authorities to court to try to keep schools closed.
Section 9(2) of the Constitution provides for the equal enjoyment of all rights and freedoms, and it prohibits unfair discrimination. And we believe that if we have some schools opening and other schools, those in poor areas, not opening, that would indeed be wrong. We believe that all schools need to be COVID-19 ready and then they should open.
Unions have also pointed out that the Western Cape is the epicenter of the nation's coronavirus outbreak, accounting for up to 65% of infections and around 500 deaths. To open learning institutions at a time like this, they argue, would endanger the lives of young and old alike. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Meanwhile, schools and universities in Cameroon reopened today with hundreds of thousands of students going to class despite a continued rise in cases of COVID-19. Cameroon so far has 6,380 confirmed cases of the coronavirus with 273 deaths. But officials say the increasing number of recoveries from the virus and health measures taken at schools makes them confident that they can handle the pandemic. Mokedun Kenzeka reports from Yaounde.
Speaking on state media Sunday, Cameroon's Prime Minister Joseph John Goute said President Paul Biya ordered schools to reopen because more than half of COVID-19 patients in the country have recovered from the disease. He said this indicates the strategy put in place by the government to protect Cameroonians from the coronavirus is yielding positive results. The Prime Minister said a majority of the 2,300 active COVID-19 patients were responding to treatment and that enough measures have been taken to reduce the risk of contamination at school.
Let us not give in to panic. The ministers concerned have been instructed to ensure that protective masks are worn and that social distancing is respected. They should also make available the required sanitary kits, such as hand sanitizers and hand washing buckets, in each establishment.
Ngute said all schools will be disinfected at least 3 times a week, and that schools that lack running water will be supplied daily by the government. Ngute said not more than 24 children will be admitted in classrooms, and that only one will sit on a bench instead of 4 or 5, as has been the practice. But 19-year-old Velma Soli says the government did not carry out its promises and she decided to return home.
I went to school and I discovered that the face masks and hand sanitizers were not available, as the government said. So I decided to come back to the house and wait. When the hand sanitizers and face masks are ready, I'll go back to school.
Teachers and university lecturers complained that some classes and lecture halls were congested and there was lack of water and soap to wash hands in some establishments. Nalova Lyonga, Minister of Secondary Education, says while the government attempts to protect children and teachers at school, parents should also make an effort to give their kids with what is needed to reduce the spread of COVID-19. Lyonga says children have a right to be educated in spite of the coronavirus threat.
Do we want to stay at home forever because there's a virus? No. So this is the time when we should support the leadership of Cameroon. We have made sure that everybody who is involved is going to be covered as far as masks are concerned, as far as the water in the schools are concerned.
Monday saw high school and primary school age children return to class. Lyonga says the government will observe for 3 days whether students and teachers are following the COVID-19 prevention measures before allowing other students to start school on Thursday. The government acknowledged that many parents, especially in the towns of Yaoundé, Douala and Bafoussam, which have recorded the highest number of COVID-19 cases, did not send their children to school. The French embassy in Yaoundé asked its citizens not to send their children to school because, according to the embassy, Cameroon's capacity to handle COVID-19 cases is falling off as the number of cases continues to climb. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The head of World Food Programme tells VOA the number of people suffering from acute food insecurity in Africa could more than double due to COVID-19. Executive Director David Beasley says the impact of the virus on the economy and the flow of supplies could affect more than 40 million people in East Africa alone. Simon Marks reports from Addis Ababa.
The head of the World Food Programme has warned a failure to keep food supply chains open during the onslaught of the coronavirus pandemic could result in more people dying of hunger than the virus itself. During a 4-day trip to Africa, WFP Executive Director David Beasley told VOA there are already grave problems distributing food because of curfews, long delays for truck drivers at border crossings, and mandatory quarantines affecting pilots. The WFP has identified 28 hotspots in Africa where trade is slow due to coronavirus restrictions, says Beasley.
Quite frankly, I mean, we've had 350,000 people around the world die from COVID over 5 months. If the supply chain breaks down like we're looking at, along with the economic deterioration, we could have 300,000 people die per day. So it can't be COVID versus hunger. We've got to thread the needle and balance both.
The WFP chief is calling on governments to more carefully review whether all the restrictions are needed.
Africa is very fragile. If we shut down ports, even for a few days, if we have border restrictions, even for a few days, it will have major hunger and humanitarian impact to the people.
Are you already experiencing that? Or
yes,
truck drivers
we are already running into issues. We're working with the leaders, explaining the complications and the impact, ripple effect, if they do restrictions unnecessarily.
In April, the WFP said that the number of people facing acute food insecurity globally could nearly double this year to 265 million due to the economic fallout of COVID-19. Most of those people reside in Africa. The number of people living on the verge of starvation has already risen to 135 million today, from 80 million 4 years ago, due to a culmination of disasters from flooding in Kenya, insecurity in the Sahel and locust plagues throughout East Africa, says the WFP. In the Horn of Africa alone, there are already approximately 20 million people suffering from severe food insecurity, a number the WFP estimates could rise to 43 million this year due to COVID-19 and other factors such as locust swarms. In Ethiopia, the region's most populous country, 7 million people are on the verge of starvation. Beasley says the situation could get worse.
If you do a lockdown in some of the urban areas in Africa, and those young people lose their jobs, and they're living day to day, hand to mouth, and they lose their job, and they don't have food, you're going to have disruption. You're going to have protests and riots and chaos.
The WFP has set up two humanitarian hubs at airports in Ethiopia and Ghana to transport medical supplies, food, and humanitarian workers across the continent. Beasley, who recovered from the coronavirus in April, said the WFP needs $960 million just to keep the supply chain up and running for humanitarian food aid. Abdi Jama, coordinator of the Intergovernmental Authority on Development's Food Security Hub, told VOA supply trucks are backed up at the border between Kenya and Uganda due to measures to contain the virus. Jama reports price hikes due to the lack of supplies.
It's looking more or less on the doubling of the number of people in need of food aid. And previously, in previous years, we used to think more about the agro-pastoralists, agriculture. But now we have the issue of these informal settlements in the urban areas, which are really a new group of people that are coming on board.
Jama also said that the Horn of Africa has one of the highest numbers of internally displaced people in the world, creating another group at high risk. Simon Marks for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Jana Amin is a rising senior in a Massachusetts high school. The Egyptian-American is super passionate about girls' education and women in Islam. As an activist, she has been using public speaking to change the narrative around Muslim women. Instead of having fun on her 17th birthday, she is standing in solidarity with girls around the world hosting 17 for 17, advocating for girls' education, a virtual event comprising 17 prominent speakers to raise awareness and funds for global efforts around girls' education. VOA's Mohammed Chernawi spoke with Jana about what she's trying to achieve in terms of girls' education.
So I'm hosting 17 speakers that are advocating for girls' education, and the hope is that this event not only raises awareness for global efforts around girls' education, but also encourages people to donate to girls' education and really highlights the importance of girls' education efforts around the world. Because of the current COVID-19 pandemic, less girls will be going back to school next fall, and I really hope to change that through this event.
So whom your list of important speakers include to showcase their support for girls' education?
We're lucky enough to have an amazing lineup joining us, and I encourage everyone to tune in if possible. We're kicking off the day with a conversation with the CEO of the Malala Fund, Suzanne Ellers. Later in the day at 11 a.m., we have Nora Files, the head of secretariat at the United Nations Girls Education Initiative. And then we also have the executive director of Michelle Obama's Girls Opportunity Alliance joining us. Perhaps more excitingly, actually, we also have an amazing list of youth activists who are joining as well. And so among those are Nibras Kudaida, who is a Yazidi refugee and was denied an education herself, and now has become an education activist and a refugee rights activist as well. And then we also have a youth art block that I encourage everyone to join as well.
You have also worked with the Collateral Repair Project, an NGO based in Amman, Jordan, to support refugees, especially refugee women and girls. Walk us, please, through your mission for refugees education.
For the past 2 years, I have been working alongside the Collateral Repair Project to tutor and Skype partners in conversation with them. So basically, they have an e-learning program where they match fluent English speakers with refugees hoping to practice their conversational English skills. And through that program, I've got to meet a variety of adult refugee women who have been really, really excited to learn English and then help their kids learn English. And I think that's just one example of how educating one woman helps educate communities. And so more recently, I've become involved with CRP Super Girls Program, which is a program that helps girls aged 6 to 12 reintegrate into school systems in Jordan and also boost their self-esteem while alleviating trauma-induced stress. And so through that program and through my work with CRP, I'm hoping to raise money and funds for CRP through the event I'm hosting this Friday.
How did your public speaking about Muslim women encourage you to go globally? And who were your audience speaking about Muslim women?
So going up, I saw a disconnect between the Muslim women in my own life and the Muslim women that I saw in the media. And that was kind of why I started public speaking and advocating for changing the narrative around Muslim women, because I felt that it was often very, very negative and it victimized Muslim women, even though most of the time they were empowered. And so my experience public speaking and advocating for Muslim women has helped me then advocate for girls and women at large. And through that experience, I've really discovered what it's like to amplify the voices of those that others believe are not amplified. And so I've been using those skills to amplify the voices of girls around the world who will never learn how to read and will never learn how to write because they cannot go to school.
That was Jana Amin, a 17-year-old Egyptian-American activist, speaking with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. A fresh Ebola outbreak has been reported in the Democratic Republic of Congo's Western Equator province. There is already an existing Ebola outbreak in the Eastern DRC. The situation presents a serious challenge to health authorities, with the coronavirus pandemic also hitting hard in Africa and the rest of the world. The French news agency AFP quoted DRC's health minister as telling reporters the new Ebola outbreak in the West so far has killed 4 people. He added that the National Institute of Biomedical Research has confirmed that samples taken from the northwestern city of Mbandaka have tested positive for Ebola. The Ebola outbreak in the eastern DRC, which officials thought to be contained before new cases were reported, has killed 2,280 people since August 2018. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wahib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thanks again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to Ndombolo and Makossa to Kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports, or check out the blog at blog.